Open your Bibles tonight to the 8th chapter of the book of Revelation. We want to talk some about the trumpets. We're getting into the sounding of the trumpets in the lesson tonight. We spent quite a bit of time discussing verse 1, 2, and 3, and we're not going to try to go back over that. But we are going to look at verse 4 here that states the fact that our prayers are sweet perfume to God. And the smoke of the incense, which came with the prayers of the saints, ascended up before God out of the angel's hand. And like I said, I have a hard time making this angel anyone other than Christ, the messenger of the covenant. The word angel there in the Greek means messenger. So I think it is the messenger of the covenant. And I believe he is the one that offers our prayers to God that are accompanied by his merits and mediation. That's what makes him successful. But anyway, if you get the whole scope of what's happening here, immediately after the prayers of the saints ascend, as it were, the divine judgment of God descends. So people say prayer doesn't do any good. Yes, it brings the judgment of God on this earth, if it's mixed with the mediation and merits of the Lord Jesus Christ. Now we see here that God does hear and answer the prayers of his people. The bare words here, which came up, to come up really is a figurative expression that denotes acceptance of that which is presented. I think probably one of the best examples of that is seen over here in the 10th chapter of the book of Acts. In verse 4, regarding prayer, this is the prayer of Cornelius. It says in the fourth verse there, the latter part, "Thy prayers and thine alms are come up for a memorial before God." So our prayers do go up before God, and they go up as a memorial. He remembers them. A memorial means that you remember something. So God remembers our prayers. That's worth noting there. Then in this same 10th chapter, in verse 31, there's another statement. "And said Cornelius, thy prayer is heard, and thine alms are had in remembrance in the sight of God." So God hears our prayers. Furthermore, he remembers our prayers. That's clearly seen here. So the God of the Bible is a prayer-hearing God, and he will hear the prayer of the tribulation saints that are suffering at the hands of Antichrist. Now, back in Luke chapter 1 and verse 10, you can see that it was the order in the Old Testament time. The father of John the Baptist is there, Zacharias, and prayer and incense go up together there in that worship. That was always the way that the worship of God was conducted in the Old Testament. Now, I say again, we are back on Old Testament grounds here because we have the prayers of the saints and the incense all being there before God. We're seeing things from the Old Testament standpoint. So the angel's intercession is accepted and the petitions of the saints are heard. That's the essence of verse 3 and 4 here. The Lamb and his sacrifice is the basis of the opening of the seals. But the angel's offering of incense is the basis of the trumpet judgment. We make a little distinction there. What we're really seeing here in verse 3 and verse 4 is nothing more than what we have back over in Leviticus chapter 1. And that is the priest, as it were, kindling the wood at the altar to build a fire. Except the fire of God's wrath is being kindled here to burn up the wicked. There's a passage back over in the book of Deuteronomy that I think probably fits this time better than any other time I know of. A lot of scholars, more able men than I am, apply it to this same period of time here, and I think they're probably right in that. It's in the 32nd chapter of Deuteronomy, verse 22. And it's a verse that doesn't seem to make any sense in the context in Deuteronomy unless you apply it to the time over here in the book of Revelation. "For a fire is kindled in mine anger, and shall burn unto the lowest hell, and shall consume the earth with her increase, and set on fire the foundations of the mountains. If Deuteronomy 32 and 22 is not going to happen here under these trumpets, then I simply wouldn't know when it's going to take place. I personally believe that that is what is about to happen here under the trumpets and the bowls of wrath that are to follow. Now let's read verse 5. It talks about the angel casting the fire that's in his fire pan or censer into the earth. And see if you can explain this verse scientifically. Or see if it's totally different from the laws of science. Now let me read it and see if you catch something. And the angel took the censer, and that's like I said, a fire pan, and filled it with fire of the altar. And that again is the brazen altar, the altar of judgment where they burned the sacrifices, where God's wrath was poured out, and cast it into the earth. He didn't cast it into heaven, he cast it into the earth. Just a simple way of saying that God's judgment has been cast upon the earth. And there were voices and thunderings and lightnings and an earthquake. Now, what's wrong with this passage from a scientific standpoint? Well, most of the time you have lightning and then you have the thundering. You've seen that, hadn't you? Lightning, you know, then you hear a cup of thunder after that. But here, the thunder comes before the lightning. So there's some very strong language here being used by God to show his wrath and his judgment. So I'd say that the scientific explanation does not fit here, because the thunder precedes the lightning, and most of the time we experience it just the other way around. So the voices, the thunderclaps, the lightning, the earthquake are all the results of this fire from the altar that the angel cast into the earth. All that begins to happen as soon as this is done. And so this is the second time that he has filled his censer. He filled it the first time. Now he has filled it a second time. This time, though, he's cast it into the earth. So there are two fillings of the fire pan here that we're reading about. Now, there are many scriptures that I think of that sound a lot like this. Back, especially in the book of Psalms, we studied the 16th Psalm, and it talks about a time of God's wrath, and it's pretty hard to pinpoint just when that wrath is, but I believe that wrath is probably under the trumpet judgment over here in the book of Revelation. In Psalm 18, verse 6 to 9, just look at a few verses there. In my distress, I called upon the Lord and cried unto my God. He heard my voice out of his temple, and my cry came up before him, even into his ears. Very much like the prayers of the saints now that's heard back over there in Revelation. Then the earth shook and trembled. The foundations also of the hills moved and were shaken, because he was wroth. There went up smoke out of his nostrils, and fire out of his mouth devoured. Coals were kindled by it. He bowed the heavens also and came down, and darkness was under his feet. I think that's probably the same time. There's some description like this in Ezekiel 38 and 39 at the destruction of Gog. There's also some more description like this in the book of Hosea, chapter 8 and verse 14, and Micah chapter 1 has a great deal of information. Sounds a lot like we're reading here in the book of Revelation. So I glean that probably many of the old prophets spoke of this time of God's baptism of fire for the earth, because the earth is about to be baptized in the fire of God's wrath. And that's why the earth has never seen anything like it before. The flood was the nearest thing to this that has ever been witnessed by mankind. This is different from the flood, though. Now let's look at the sixth verse there. We see that the angels are preparing to sound the trumpets. In other words, we might put it in modern terminology, they hadn't tooted the horn yet, but they're ready to go. Because that's what it amounts to. And the seven angels which had the seven trumpets prepared themselves to sound. Now that means that these angels, by preparing themselves to sound, are getting into a different posture than what they were before. If they were human beings, we would probably say that they had inflated their lungs and puffed up their cheeks and their lips, and they were ready to blow. That's the general idea there, looking at it from the human standpoint. And whenever they start to blow the trumpets, these trumpets will be blown in rapid succession, one right after the other. And I believe that the succession will be so rapid before they have gotten through the misery of number one, they've already been hit by number two, and before number two, number three's hit them still again. So that it devastates the entire earth just about it, because of many problems we're going to point out. Before we look at these trumpets, though, I want to take a little time to tell you why I believe these trumpets are literal. I believe they are literal. When it says that a mountain fell in the sea, I believe that's a mountain that fell in the sea. I mean exactly what the Bible says. That's what I believe. But I'm going to give you a number of reasons why I believe that we ought to take these trumpets from the literal standpoint. First of all, this is the book of Revelation. The veil is taken off. And so whenever possible, we must take this book in the literal sense. And these trumpets sound literal, and therefore I would say they are literal. And then let me tell you something else. How in the world would you keep a secret by blowing a trumpet? I mean, that doesn't sound like you're trying to keep a secret if you're going to blow a trumpet, does it? I can't associate that with some great secret, some great symbol, some great mystery. Sounding of a trumpet, I mean, is sounding of a trumpet. It's not something secret, it's something that everybody hears and knows about. All of those 10 plagues in Egypt were literal. Many of those plagues will be repeated under the time of the tribulation period, and they also will be literal. The plagues in the book of Revelation are as literal as the plagues in the book of Exodus. And if I did not believe the plagues were literal in Revelation, then I would not believe that they were literal in the book of Exodus. I'd either take them both in the literal sense, or I'd take neither in the literal sense. Because it looks to me like you'd have to do one way or the other there. So if the plagues were literal in the days of the Egyptians and Moses, why would they not be literal now? Will not Israel be in greater danger from the Antichrist than they ever were from Pharaoh? The answer is yes. So why wouldn't God work a miracle to deliver his people, you see? Now, the miracles of Israel's deliverance from Egypt, the Bible says, will be repeated, but on a greater scale. That's what the Old Testament says. Let's take a little time to look at some of that. Go to the book of, well, you can go to Isaiah chapter 11 first if you want to, and then we'll go to some other books. Let's go to Isaiah 11 and look at the passage there. Isaiah chapter 11, verse 11 and 12. And it shall come to pass in that day that the Lord shall set his hand again the second time. The Exodus was the first time. To recover the remnant of his people which shall be left from Assyria and from Egypt and from Pathros and from Cush and from Elam and from Shinar and from Hamath and from the islands of the sea. There has never in the past been any gathering of Israel like the gathering there. This is what we might call the second Exodus. And it's a gathering from all nations. It's called a second time. And he shall set up an ensign for the nations, and shall assemble the outcast of Israel, and gather together the dispersed of Judah from the four corners of the earth. There has never been a gathering like that, but there will be. But what I want you to see here is that the Lord is going to gather Israel a second time with his great power. The Lord shall set his hand again. He set his hand to deliver them the first time. The hand of God is a pretty big hand, as we all know. Now look at another place it's found, in Jeremiah chapter 23, verse 7 and 8. Therefore, behold, the days come, saith the Lord, that they shall say no more, the Lord liveth, which brought up the children of Israel out of the land of Egypt. But the Lord liveth, which brought up and which led the seed of the house of Israel out of the north country, and from all the countries whither I have driven them, they shall dwell in their own land. This again is that second Exodus, as it were. Going over now to the minor prophets, to the book of Micah, and look at some statements there in chapter 7, verse 15 and 16. He's talking about the nation of Israel in the context. According to the days of thy coming out of the land of Egypt, will I show unto him marvelous things. The seven trumpets? I think so. The nations shall see and be confounded at all their might. They shall lay their hands upon their mouth. Their ears shall be deaf. They shall lick the dust like a serpent. They shall move out of their holes like the worms of the earth. They shall be afraid of the Lord our God and shall fear because of thee. I think all of these verses really have reference to what I call the second Exodus, when God is going to gather his people out, and he's going to do it by great signs and wonders. And some of these signs and wonders will be just like the plagues in Egypt, except they're going to be repeated again. The covenant that God made with Israel at Mount Sinai demands that if he deals with them, that he show signs and wonders. Go back and look at Exodus 34 and verse 10. And he said, behold, I make a covenant before all thy people that I will do marvels, great miracles, great signs, great wonders, you see, such as have not been done in all the earth, nor in any nation, and in all the people among which thou shalt see the work of the Lord, for it is a terrible thing that I will do with thee. So God's covenant made with Israel expressly promises miracles of terror as a basis for their disobedience. Well, the trumpets are going to be some of that. Also in the book of Deuteronomy, God said that there would be miracles of judgment come upon them, great woe and all of that if they did not obey his commandments. Well, we see Israel in the tribulation in a state of disobedience. In Deuteronomy chapter 28, verse 58 and 59, if thou wilt not observe to do all the words of this law that are written in this book, that thou mayest fear the glorious and fearful name, the Lord thy God, then the Lord will make thy plagues wonderful. In other words, he'll bring plagues upon them. What do you think that those plagues in the tribulation are? I think they're especially going to, this time, be upon Israel. And the plagues of thy seed, even great plagues, and of long continuance, and sore sickness, and of long continuance. 7 years of that would be a long time, believe me. Even one day of some of these plagues would be a long time, as we're about to see. Another thing, God always pours out his wrath when the iniquity of man is ripe. And during the time of the tribulation, the wickedness of the earth will be so great it will produce the man of sin, the son of perdition, the Antichrist. So you see that wickedness in man will have come to full, and therefore the judgment of God must be meted out against this awful wickedness. I believe that Psalms 2 probably describes that time. We also know that during the time of the 7-year tribulation period, the devil's going to work a lot of miracles, like 2 Thessalonians 2 and 9 talks about signs and wonders that he's going to show, Revelation 13, 2 and 3, Revelation 13, 13, Revelation 16, 14, all of these talk about miracles that are done by the devil. So if the devil is going to show great signs and wonders during the tribulation, why will Almighty God not also show greater signs and greater wonders by pouring out judgment on the earth? In fact, I believe that he will. Also, Christ said in the 17th chapter of Luke, verse 26 to 30, that the time before he comes back to set up the kingdom will be like the days of Noe and Lot. Well, what did you have going on in the days of Noah and Lot? You had angel activity and you had great judgment coming forth from God. So then if you're going to have a repeat of the days of Noah and Lot, then why not some repeat of the judgment of God in a literal sense, just like literal judgment came upon the world in Noah's day, and literal judgment came upon the world in Lot's day, there in the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah and the other cities of the plains. Well, let's get into that first trumpet here. That's in verse 7. The first angel sounded, and there followed hail and fire mingled with blood, and they were cast upon the earth, and the third part of the trees were burned up, and all the green grass was burned up. Now, this sounds like a great electrical storm to me. Probably a little more than that. But it is nothing in the world but probably a repeat of the seventh Egyptian plague back in the book of Exodus. Let's go back over there and note there's a little difference. There are some things mentioned here in Exodus that are not in Revelation, some things in Revelation that's not in Exodus. But go back to the ninth chapter of the book of Exodus, and you can get some idea of what happened back there as we read verse 22 on down a ways there. And the Lord said unto Moses, stretch forth thine hand toward heaven, that there may be hail in all the land of Egypt, upon man and upon beast and upon every herb of the field throughout all the land of Egypt. And Moses stretched forth his rod toward heaven, and the Lord sent thunder and hail and fire ran along the ground. That sounded to me like lightning going everywhere. And the Lord rained hail upon the land of Egypt. So then was hail and fire mingled with hail, very grievous, such as there was none like it in all the land of Egypt since it became a nation. And the hail smote throughout all the land of Egypt, all that was in the field, both man and beast, and the hail smote every herb of the field, and brake every tree of the field. Only in the land of Goshen, where the children of Israel were, was there no hail. Now think about the statement there, and then come back over here and look. Hail and fire mingle with blood. That is the seventh Egyptian plague. I think probably that Joel 2 and 30 refers to this time, though some would apply it to another time. There was hail and fire, but no blood in the land of Egypt. But here we have hail, fire, and blood. I would just suppose that this is blood-covered water. In other words, the rain looks like blood. Of course, it may create some blood, too, from all the things that's going to happen. After all, when you think about it, blood is about, what, 90% water anyway. So, if you talk about rain that is red, it wouldn't have to be very red to be a lot like blood. So, remember now there was a period of time back over here in chapter 7 that the angels could not hurt the earth until the 144,000 Israelites were sealed. There was a, well, we might call it a restraint put upon them for a time. But that restraint has been removed. That means the servants of God have already been sealed, right? They'd have to be. Look back at chapter 7 now. Verse 1. And after these things I saw four angels standing on the four corners of the earth, holding the four winds of the earth, that the wind should not blow on the earth, nor on the sea, nor on any tree. And I saw another angel ascend from the east, having the seal of the living God. And he cried with a loud voice to the four angels to whom it was given to hurt the earth and the sea. Now, those angels are going to hurt the earth and the sea. Hurt not the earth, neither the sea, nor the trees, for we have sealed the servants of our God in their forehead. But you note here that this judgment involves a third part of the trees being burned up and all the green grass. We got a lot of forest fires out in the west now that's devastating the western part of our country, burning up thousands and thousands of acres of timber and making devastation throughout many places out there. And they tell me that a lot of those fires are started by lightning. Of course, I know arsonists do some of it. But they say a great majority of those fires are started by lightning. That was surprising to me when I listened to the firemen talk about that. In other words, God starts them, I guess you might say, because I wouldn't know any other way to put it than that when you think about it, if it's done that way. So that exemption there in Revelation chapter 2, verse 2 and 3 has been removed. The trees and the grass receive the first blow of God's judgment. It seems like that God starts down at the bottom with his judgment and brings it all the way up. And finally, it gets some men too. Right now, though, it's judgment on vegetation. That's what this first trumpet is. Judgment on vegetation. Now it says that one third of the trees were burned up. Can you imagine one third of all the forests and orchards of the world being burned to powder? Somebody wouldn't be able to go to Walmart and buy some apples and oranges. Be the first thing I'd mention if all those trees gets burned up. That's going to affect the food supply of the world. There's no way it can not do it when you think about it. And so one third of the forest land of the whole world is destroyed. So what's happening out in the western part of our country at the present time is not a drop in the bucket compared to this. This is a devastation of all the orchards and forests, one third throughout the world. That's a terrible thing to think about when you let it soak in, because it'd bring a lot of suffering to men and beasts. Indirectly, of course, but it will. And while only a third part of the trees are burned up, it says all the green grass was burned up. That's a sweeping statement. Wonder where the cows are going to eat. You say, well, too bad for the cows. Well, let's wait just a minute. A lot of the crops that we call grains and all of that sometime are almost listed like grass, like wheat, rice, oats. We think of that as being almost like grass. It probably means that all the fields are going to be burned up too. Now, what would happen if you burned up all the green grass all over the world? What would happen right here in the place where we are if you burned off all the hillside like or something? First thing you'll notice will be soil erosion. There's no grass there to hold that soil back, and you'll have mudslides, and you'll have floods, and you'll have all kinds of things take place. Now, all of that burning will what? Create all kinds of air pollution. These environmentalists are going to go crazy during this time. I mean, they're going to lose a screw. They're going to have all the grass on the earth burned up and one third of the forest and orchards all burned up. So they're really going to be in tears, I suppose, by this time. It's going to be a sad time for them. It's going to be a sad time for everybody that will be here on this earth. Because all of our ecology will be out of balance. There'll be little food for man or beast under that judgment right there. And that's exactly what's going to happen. Then there is this second trumpet. That is a judgment on the waters of commerce and transportation there in verse 8 and 9. And the second angel sounded, and as it were a great mountain burning with fire was cast into the sea. Now, he didn't say that it was a mountain, but it looked like that to him. So it would be a large body of land or something, a large object of some kind. And the third part of the sea became blood. Sounds like another Egyptian plague. Remember, the Nile was turned to blood. And the third part of the creatures which were in the sea and had life died. And the third part of the ships were destroyed. Now, under the first trumpet, we had the forest, the fruit, and the pastures all affected. Now we have the marine life affected. We have the bloody sea filled with sinking ships, dead, putrefying, stinking fish with white bellies turned up on the bosom of a Red Sea. Believe me, that would be an awful sight to behold. I don't know. I would suppose that this might be a meteorite, an asteroid, You can take your own judgment as to what it is. It's probably some great meteor or something from outer space that will come. It'll have something in it that will color the sea red. It will evidently be very poison, whatever it is. And it's going to bring great destruction. Now, if these plagues are not literal, somebody please tell me in the past when this happened. When a third of the ships of the world were destroyed, and all these seas all turned to blood and all that. Would somebody please tell me when that happened? It hadn't ever happened, you see. If the Bible's true, it's got to happen out there in the future. These plagues are literal. And so the great burning mass here that appears to be like a great mountain, he's not talking here about history in the past. He's talking about prophecy yet to be fulfilled in the future. And I think this is probably a giant meteorite or an asteroid. I still believe that. But it in fact is God's judgment upon the sea. And it is a repeat of the first Egyptian plague back there in Exodus chapter 7, verse 19 to 21. And you know, Jesus one time said, talked about a mountain being cast into the sea there in Matthew 20 and 21. I thought of that this afternoon. Well, here's a time that he's going to cast a mountain in the sea. Maybe he spoke there in a figurative sense, and maybe he spoke in view of what he was going to do in the future. You know, if you have faith as a grain of mustard seed, you can say to this mountain, go and be cast into the sea, and it'll go. Well, maybe that's the reference here, but we have a repeat of the first Egyptian plague under the second trumpet. That's all in the world it is, except it's on a greater scale. It's in the land of Egypt only, back there in the time of the Old Testament, but this is going to be a worldwide thing, so far as I'm able to tell. I don't know just how to explain what may happen here. I'm not a scientist, but it's possible that the sea may be chemically changed to blood. That's a possibility. It could be that this blood will come from all the destroyed marine life that will literally turn it red. I mean, if all of them gets killed and all their blood's in the water, then I can see how it'll be turned to red. Or it could be there's something in this meteor that will turn the sea red and kill all of the marine life and all of that. I don't know just how God's going to do it, but I'm certain of one thing. It's going to greatly affect the food supply of the world. You know, there's one way you can get a man's attention. If you can't get it any other way, cut off his food supply. Now, if you cut off his paycheck, you'd get pretty mad. He'll stand that for a time, though, but you cut off his food supply and you're going to be in trouble. He'll stand for a lot of things, but he ain't going to stand for that too long because he's got to have something to eat. His body requires it. Well, what you're going to have here is one of the worst famines that the world's ever known. Did Jesus not say that the famine would come? Did we not see in Revelation here about the four horsemen how that you're going to have all this famine? Well, this would bring about the famine. This is how God's going to do it. You kill a third of the marine life and burn up all the grass and a third of the forest and orchards. You've got a devastation so far as the food supply is concerned. Somebody said, now what about the third part of the ships being destroyed? I've thought a lot about that. I don't know just how to explain it. There are ideas that bounce in and out of my head and may or may not be correct. If this great mountain, as it's called in the Bible, is cast into the sea, that would create a giant tidal wave, wouldn't it? I mean, a big storm creates tidal waves on our Gulf Coast and sends 20 and 30 foot of water up sometime down there. You read about it in the paper. Just imagine if somebody picked up something as big as the Smoky Mountains and threw it in the Atlantic Ocean. Or picked up something like the Rocky Mountains and threw them in the Pacific Ocean. Most of you that are younger people, you've taken rock and thrown it in the water, and you see how the little waves, you know, come, makes little waves. Well, you just multiply that thousands and thousands, maybe millions of times, and you get the idea that you'd have a tidal wave that would just about wipe out the country. Remember, Jesus said at this time, the sea and the waves roaring. Well, I'd say it'd probably be the tidal wave that will turn some of these ships upside down. In other words, they're going to go down. And that probably accounts for the naval vessels and the merchant ships, and that's what I think probably be under consideration there. When you think about the ships, you think about merchant ships, and you think about naval ships and things like that, and they would all be destroyed. One-third of them would be destroyed by this falling mountain. I think surely that the sea this may fall in is not spelled out right here in the Bible, but based on all the knowledge of the Scripture, it more than likely would be the Mediterranean Sea. That would be near Israel. Well, I don't know whether you know it or not, but the U.S. 6th Fleet is stationed in the Mediterranean Sea. And so are fleets from almost all of the leading nations of the world, because that's a troublesome part of the world. They can go all directions there. And so you can imagine what would happen to the U.S. 6th Fleet if that mountain fell in the next few days into the Mediterranean. We might not have any 6th Fleet anymore. Probably wouldn't. These things are literal, and they're going to happen just like God said. People may not believe it, but some of the younger people here might live to see all these things come to pass. I might live to see it as old as I am. Who knows? It may start there soon. Maybe looking down from heaven on all of them. That's where I expect to be. But it'll be going on down here on the earth. Nevertheless, perhaps it could happen even in my lifetime, in your lifetime. Well, that's our lesson for tonight. Let us stand and we'll sing.